Welcome to the Hospitality Forward podcast with listeners in more than 160 countries worldwide.
My name is Hannah Lee. I am president and founder of Hannah Lee Communications, an award-winning global PR agency specialized in hospitality and travel.
And I'm Michael Ann Stendick, editor-in-chief of Hannah Lee Communications, as well as the award-winning co-author of The Japanese Art of the Cocktail and a food and beverage writer. Helping the community has always been part of our agency's mission. We understand that a lot of business owners, bartenders, chefs, sommeliers, and others might not have the resources to hire a PR agency. We believe everyone has a story to share, so we created our podcast where our listeners can get to know leading reporters and writers and start building relationships.
Each week, these top journalists from around the globe share their practical advice on how hospitality and travel industry professionals can be featured in their stories.
In fact, one of our loyal listeners got featured in the New York Times after listening to our podcast and following our media guest tips. So, you could be next. In addition, we give away a copy of our agency's book, The Japanese Art of the Cocktail, to a listener who shares how our podcast helped them tell their story to the media. Simply email us at hello@hannahleecommunications.com, have Hospitality Forward in the subject line, and share the tip that you learned. And now, on with the show. In this episode, we're delighted to chat with Jen Kester. Jen is Vice President and Executive Editor of Forbes Travel Guide. She covers everything that touches upon luxury travel, food and drink, culture, wellness, and hotels. Jen has been an editor and writer for Forbes Travel Guide since 2008 and has served as Executive Editor since 2015. She's visited hundreds of luxury hotels, and her travels have brought her everywhere from Toronto to Tallinn to Tokyo to Tasmania during her more than two decades-long career. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the show.
So great to see you.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been a journalist for more than 20 years. Can you take us back to how you got started?
Sure. It started actually in high school. I took a journalism class and I fell in love with it. I started working on my high school yearbook, my high school newspaper, And from there, I just fell for the profession. And I went to college and studied political science and journalism. I thought that I was going to be more on the news side of the business. And then I started working in newspapers. And while I did really love it, I had an opportunity to work with Time Out. And Time Out was launching a Chicago magazine. And they recruited me to help be part of the launch team. And that was pretty much a career-changing experience for me because I realized that I really love telling stories about destinations and restaurants and hotels and spas. And from there, I just started working more in the lifestyle space.
You're now vice president and executive editor of Forbes Travel Guide, where you oversee its editorial department. What kinds of topics do you cover?
We focus primarily on luxury travel, and that entails a lot. Our big focus is hotels because that's sort of our bread and butter. We're known for our annual list of five-star, four-star, and recommended properties. So our coverage revolves around those properties, but it touches upon everything from wellness to food and beverage to adventure travel to really arts and culture. Anything that can be part of a luxury trip is what we cover. And we cover the globe. So everywhere, every continent, we have a presence in.
We are so excited to dive into Forbes Travel Guide. So can you tell us about its history and what sets it apart from other guides?
So we started as Mobile Travel Guide back in 1968. And back then, Mobile Gas Company was looking for a way to get travelers on the road and consuming their gas. So what it decided to do was create a guidebook that it would sell at all of its gas stations. And the mobile travel guide really became a go-to resource for all road trippers across North America. And the guidebook covered everything from one-star hotels to five-star hotels. And it really did well. But eventually, Exxon acquired Mobil Gas. And at that time, Mobil had decided it wanted to get out of the guidebook business and focus on research and development. So what it did was the company was acquired by a gentleman named Jeff Arnold, and he wanted to bring travel back online in a big way and focus on the luxury segment. So we dropped the one star, we dropped the two star, focusing on what we call recommended and above. And we sought a brand partner that would encapsulate that luxury traveler. And so we approached Forbes Media and we ironed out a deal with them where we licensed the name from Forbes. But we are a separate company. We have our own website, ForbesTravelGuide.com. But we are almost like sister publications because we have a channel on Forbes.com. We work closely with the teams there. But from there on, we really focused on becoming a luxury hospitality authority. And we've been rating since our founding. And the one thing a lot of people don't know is that we actually were the first to use five star. We never trademarked it, but we were the originators of it. And for us, what we try to bring to the guidebook space is, you know, there are those Yelps and TripAdvisors out there where really anyone could weigh in with their opinion, but we bring to the table authoritative information that's pulled from objective data. So when our inspectors go on these multi-night stays at properties, they're checking hundreds of standards. And it's a very detailed process, but it's also, like I said, very data-driven. So it's not just someone saying, I love this hotel. You should like it too. There's really some gravity behind what their ratings are. It's not something that is subjective.
So on editorial side, what are the key factors you look for when you decide to write a story?
What we really look for is obviously newsworthiness is important. You know, is it something new? Is it something exciting? Something we haven't seen before? But we also try to cover those things that people don't know about that maybe have been around for a long time. Or, you know, we try to take maybe a property that everybody knows, but delve a little bit deeper to see, you know, did you realize that this property had these offerings or the history of it? Shining a light on the different facets of all of the gorgeous properties that we cover. But really trying to find each story that each property has. And a lot of them, because they're so fantastic, they have multiple stories to tell.
What does a typical day at the office look like for you?
It starts at my home because I work remotely with a lot of tea. But from there, it's, you know, no 2 days are alike. It could be anything from writing to editing. It could be, you know, lots of meetings, figuring out lineups for stories for our correspondents. It could be going and arranging my future travels. It really runs the gamut, but it's never boring.
Just like our lives, the same.
Yes.
We know that feeling.
That's right.
So why don't we dig a little deeper into your editorial team? Is it primarily staff members or do you work with a lot of freelancers around the world?
So the way we operate is we have a very small editorial in-house team. There is myself and two other editors, and we have a network of about 20 correspondents all over the globe. And so these correspondents feed us content, and they're the ones who are on the ground reporting on the best and most exciting things in their cities.
So how do you select your correspondent?
We go through a vetting process where we look at their portfolios. We look to see people who are really well-rounded, but also just very immersed in their hospitality scene. We want people who come in as experts, like, so that we don't have to really train them. But, so we really look for people who are experts in their areas.
So recently, Forbes Travel Guide announced the winners of the 2024 Star Awards. So what was the inspiration for starting these annual awards?
It really was to highlight the best properties in the world. And, you know, what makes our ratings different from others is that ours is very service driven. So really, you know, it's great. I know when properties get other awards, they're of course very excited, but there's something different about getting, for example, a 5-star with Forbes Travel Guide or a 4-star, because the staffs see it as sort of the Academy Awards for the hospitality industry. And they all work so incredibly hard. When I've been at our summit and I've seen some of the general managers who well up or cry because they are, you know, it's years of hard work. It's not just, you know, it's such a monumental achievement for them. And it makes me so proud to do what I do, because to be able to recognize that, you know, it's one thing for a property to just get an award, but it's another thing for the entire staff, from the bellman to the housekeeper to the engineer, for all of them to have played a role in an award it's something very special.
I think, you know, your awards is not only you're recognizing their hard work and excellence in what they do, but also basically you're changing their lives. We love what you do. So thank you.
Thank you.
How would you say these awards are unique vis-a-vis, you know, perhaps other awards that are out there?
All of the ratings are tabulated using an algorithm and data from the inspectors, and the inspectors are incognito. They don't announce themselves. I have nothing to do with ratings. I'm, you know, the editorial department. So what they do is they go in there and they test hundreds of standards, everything from, did they greet me when I first walk in? Did they use my name when I was passing through the property? You know, there's so many, and it's really so focused on service. Whereas others, you know, they talk more about the facility, right? They'll say it's a beautiful hotel and it has Art Deco elegance, and they'll have, and those things of course are important. But for us, what really sets a property apart isn't how beautiful the lobby is or how plush the bed is. It's the people. Because when you leave, that's going to be what you remember the most, is how they made you feel. So for us, it really is trying to reward that, reward people who are making your trip special. And it doesn't have to be the big flashy touches, you know, setting up some kind of grand gesture where there's, you know, a breakfast on the beach or something like that. It can be as simple as writing a really heartfelt note welcoming you new to the property, or recognizing that you're running out of toothpaste and just slipping a new tube of toothpaste right next to it. It's being caring, thoughtful, and anticipatory.
Well, you had a wonderful story on the 4 top luxury travel trends, including the rise of well-being travel, solo travel, business travel, and small cities travel. So which of these trends surprised you the most, and which ones do you see having the most staying power and impact?
I think the one that surprised me the most was the rise in solo travel. So we had our summit in late February, and we had a slate of amazing speakers. Our summit really brings together the top speakers in the industry, and one of the keynotes was from Chip Conley, who was part of Airbnb and had, you know, various other ventures. And he talked about loneliness as a trend. And at first I was a little taken aback, because I was thinking, how is loneliness a travel trend? But more other speakers also spoke to that. We had Rafat Ali from Skift, who talked about one in four homes now have one person living alone. And so we have to accommodate that in the hospitality industry. So we have these people who live alone, who are going to be traveling alone. And so what kind of experiences do we do for people to make them feel like they're part of something? Because that's what people seek when they travel. They seek connection with a destination, it's people. So that was a really surprising way for me to think about it, because apparently we have more people living by themselves now than we ever have in our history. So trying to think that through as far as what that means for tour providers, what that means for hotels, cruise ships, is, I think, really interesting.
We loved your story on luxury hotels that provide access to wildlife. And great to see that Giraffe Manor in Nairobi on your list, because we went there last year and we are huge fans of it. So overall, what other innovations are you seeing in adventure travel?
It's certainly an area that is seeing a lot of interest. I think coming out of the pandemic, and I think people are hungry for experiences where they can do something active and fun and interesting and something outside of the ordinary. I would say that maybe something that I've noticed is that these sort of safari experiences aren't only limited to Africa anymore. They're being offered in places all over the globe. Even in that story I wrote, a lot of the properties also in Montana, and, you know, there's, which also has been seeing a resurgence, but there's all of these properties that are trying to capitalize on that and allowing you to go and ride the horses, you know, in the wilds. And, you know, Rwanda is doing a lot of gorilla trekking, and that's become so popular that they've, I know, upped the price for the tickets that you have to purchase for that. And other places are trying to capitalize on it and try to figure out ways to offer these wildlife or adventure travel experiences, whether it's, you know, fly fishing at the Broadmoor in Colorado, or there's a new giraffe hotel in Texas called Longneck Manor. And the owner there is a former zookeeper from the Houston Zoo. So I think it's, what we're going to see is these experiences are going to be are a lot more widespread than they once were.
So, Jen, you've been in this business for quite a while now. How have you seen a change in the way that you work and manage your team?
It's kind of funny, because in a way we were maybe a more forward-thinking company where I was remote work before COVID. And so that was interesting to see everybody else go remote and deal with that. When we've sort of perfected that, we had Zoom calls, team calls way before 2020. But for me, really, so it hasn't changed a ton since then. Like I said, our correspondents are located all over the globe anyway. So we've always had this sort of remote, very email heavy way of communication. But I think what has changed is trying to keep in mind of, okay, there's a lot of things that have changed since the pandemic. Maybe people aren't comfortable visiting a certain place, or maybe people aren't comfortable dining with a big group. And just making sure that no matter what assignment someone's on, that they always feel safe and healthy and making sure they're secure.
So I'm sure that you have a lot of go-to sources that you work with. So could you give our listeners some advice on how these relationships are established and cultivated?
A lot of times it happens through email. Honestly, people just pitching that way. And, you know, I can't answer every email I get, unfortunately, but I do make note when there's people who are really bringing interesting, thoughtful pitches to the table. And I think one of the I get a lot of times people just ask me, what are you working on? And that's such a difficult question for me because I feel like I'm working on, you know, 50 things at once. But when somebody picks up that I've been writing about a particular theme, or they see, you know, an opportunity that I may have missed, I definitely keep that in the back of my mind and may go back to that person, or just make sure when I'll seek out their pitches when they send them to me.
Our listeners, who we see as newsmakers in the travel and hospitality industry, when they are ready to pitch their stories to you, what kind of practical tips would you like to offer?
I think timing is important. So if you're doing something very timely, say you want to talk about summer cocktails, or you want to talk about, you know, Easter brunches, you have to start pitching to editors at least a month ahead of time. I think the earlier, the better. And also when you do it early, you also stand out from the rest because you may be the first. But a lot of times I will get pitches for that the week before, a couple of weeks before, and by then it's almost too late to do anything. But I think just being cognizant of the time and making sure that you do it early and you try to make sure you're also very all-encompassing in your pitch. One thing I always appreciate is when somebody sends me a pitch and there's photos included, it's just one less step I have to take to request a photo and then wait for it. And then, you know, if I have maybe two choices where one has a photo and one doesn't, I will go with the one that has the photo, so that if they're pretty, you know, if they're both sort of at the same level, I'll pick the one that has the photo because it's there and it's easier for me.
That makes total sense. And I think there's a lot of people now investing in photography because it's such an important part of visual storytelling.
Absolutely. Of course, photography is very important. But even if it isn't, you know, the most artistic photo, just having something visual to accompany your story is very, very helpful.
So we call our podcast Hospitality Forward because we celebrate individuals and companies that are making an impact through innovation. So is there anyone or organization you'd like to spotlight?
I would say, you know, when we had our summit, there was a speaker who really resonated with me. Her name is Mia Kirkos, and she works in the wellness space. And what was interesting to me is that she was talking about wellness as not just a spa, but a real movement in hospitality. And it has been. People can't really say it's a fad anymore because it has become so ubiquitous, and it isn't just spas or, you know, a sleep turn down, or anything like that, you know, a pillow menu. And she was saying that she did a poll among CEOs and upper executives, and she asked them about the importance of spas or wellness, and there were like 97%, I believe, who said that it was integral to the experience. So that is such a huge jump from where we were, say, pre-pandemic, when whenever you thought of wellness, you thought of spas, but now it's really become part of almost every facet of a stay. So you go into a bar and you have zero proof cocktails now, and they're not just boring, oh, here's a juice. You have really thoughtfully curated, you know, mocktails. You have healthier options for dining. And they are reexamining, hotels are reexamining the sleep experience, where, you know, it's everything from the kind of bedding you're having to the kind of lighting in your room. So I think hearing her and all of her insights on how this has become really a mainstay for hospitality was really inspiring to me.
Well, now, looking ahead, what country is on your bucket list to visit and why?
Indonesia has been on my bucket list for quite some time. I've never been to Bali, and it just, you look at photos and it's absolutely stunning with the rice paddies and the water, and it just seems like a paradise. So I'm excited. I'm going to be heading there soon.
Ah, congratulations. It's on our bucket list as well. So tell us all about your experience when you come back.
I will.
On a practical side, do you have any tips for dealing with jet lag?
So for me, what I've found to do is I look at what the time is in my destination, and I change my routine accordingly the day before. So if it's evening there, I'm going to try to go to sleep early. If it's the morning, I'm going to try to stay awake. And I just try to change my internal clock, like, you know, before I get onto the plane, so that it's easier to adapt once I get there.
Well, speaking of getting into the plane, how about your favorite packing hacks?
I am a carry-on girl only. I don't check anything. I roll my clothes. That's, you know, key. And I think that for women especially, the one thing a lot of people have issues with are their toiletries when they're doing carry-on. But I have a couple of little like go-tos for that. There's a company that's called Pallet that has these tiny little, it almost looks like little, like painter palette sized containers, and you could fit so much in there. And another one is like even cheaper is use contact lens cases for makeup or other liquids that you may need. It saves a ton of room.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. So what's your favorite cocktail and why? And who would you like to share it with?
I love champagne and I love gin. So those are probably like my two go-tos, but I'll have to go with a French 75. It's just classic. I think bubbles always add festivities to whatever gathering you're in, whether it's, you know, 9 a.m. or it's, you know, 11 p.m. It's still always festive. And I would love to have it with both of you because I want to hear more about your Giraffe Manor excursion and trade more stories about travel.
Oh, we love that opportunity.
We're very touched. Well, staying on the subject of cocktails for a moment, what do you think the next it drink will be?
I have been really kind of shocked at how much people are doing, bartenders are doing with zero proof cocktails, because they're starting to, these like fake liquors are becoming so good that you can't even taste the difference between, you know, a gin and tonic and a non-gin and tonic. So I think that's really interesting, but it never ceases to amaze me how much creativity there is in the bar space.
Yeah, agreed.
Definitely. And I think the non-alcoholic cocktail is not a trend. It's now it's a movement.
It's here to stay.
It is.
Sure.
It is.
So before we let you go, what is the best way for our listeners to reach you?
I would say via social media is great. Instagram is my social media of choice. I'm at jennifer.kester. I'm also available via email at jkester@forbestravelguide.com.
And speaking of social media, do you have some practical tips for our listeners, you know, whether they are hoteliers or chefs or bartenders, what they should do more on their social media channels?
I actually oversee Forbes Travel Guide's Instagram account, and we have a great following on there. And I see a lot of properties doing really interesting, great things. And there's so many trends you could jump on. There's so many things that you could do. But probably the best advice I could give is to just be consistent and make sure that you are posting at a cadence that works for you, but is also enough to kind of whet the appetite for your audience. So you don't want to just post like once and then you kind of drift off and you don't know when we'll see another post, but just making sure you're consistent, because the algorithm also will reward you for posting consistently.
Do you like to see more personality behind the project? For example, the GM behind the project or someone who's in charge of the room service. Do you think they should put more their team forward on their social media channels in addition to beautiful properties and designs and food and drinks?
I think anytime you have a compelling story to share, you should. And you should make sure you highlight that. And I would only say the only thing I would mention as a caveat is just to make sure the person feels comfortable in front of a camera or, you know, I know it can be very daunting to have somebody filming a reel and, you know, you have to speak or you have to be creating a cocktail right in front of a bunch of people. So just making sure that that person is comfortable. But there's other ways that obviously you can share their story and share what they do without putting them front and center.
Good advice.
That's very true.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And it was so much fun. And you know what? We're really looking forward to getting together and sharing a French 75 or two or more.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Now that was a worldly chat with Jen. Now that you know what Jen is looking for, please feel free to reach out to her and introduce yourself. And don't forget to mention that you heard her on our Hospitality Forward podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with your friends and colleagues. And be sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your favorite shows. Also, for all media guests to date, you can find their information and episodes on our agency's website, www.hanaleecommunications.com.
Until then, join us as we move hospitality forward together.